Welcome to My Weekly Mixtape, a podcast that takes the classic mixtape approach to building a modern playlist. I'm your host, Brian Colburn. This episode is a bit of a different animal. It is a bonus episode, as this week's current episode, the Ultimate Modern Female Country Artists Playlist with guest curator Carrie Cunningham, has been making the rounds and has been getting some amazing feedback thus far. As the first country episode on My Weekly Mixtape, it puts a real big smile on my face. Now, in a minor spoiler alert for that episode, I chose a song from country artist Morgan Wade, and I had pulled a short clip of her talking about the song's origins from an interview that Jay Sweet and I did with her back in 2021 for the Tune Styles podcast. Now, breaking the fourth wall a bit here, little did we know that that episode was actually the penultimate episode of Tune Styles, and 1 week later, the show's final episode would air. In another little did we know moment, when we ended our contract with our then podcast host, all 81 episodes of Tune Styles disappeared from podcast services as if they'd never happened at all. So when I pulled that clip of Morgan Wade for this week's episode, I kind of felt compelled to listen back to our entire discussion because it had been a few years. And like all the interviews I've produced for My Weekly Mixtape, Jay and my questions were centered around the stories behind the songs, something that, to me at least, makes for a timeless slash evergreen kind of listen. So after listening through the episode, I reached out to Jay and pitched this idea of sharing our sit down with Morgan as a bonus episode of My Weekly Mixtape, because unless you were one of the Tune Styles faithful who tuned in over that 3 week period between when this episode launched and when the show ended, this is pretty much an unheard interview with her. And we dove into a bunch of tracks from her 2021 debut album, Reckless, as well as talked about some stuff from her R Vinyl sessions, as well as some of the music she did prior to working with Sadler Vaden on Reckless. Remember, if you like what you're hearing on My Weekly Mixtape, you can help me out by either telling a friend about the show, leaving the show a 5-star review wherever you're tuning in, or becoming a Patreon mixtaper at patreon.com/myweeklymixtape. There you can enjoy ad-free episodes of the show, you can become a future guest, interact with the other mixtapers, and so much more. So after this, I'll fire up the My Weekly Mixtape Wayback Machine and bring us back to 2021, where Jay Sweet and I sat down with the incredible Morgan Wade.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
And joining us now is Morgan Wade. Morgan, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, your debut LP, Reckless, was produced by Sadler Vaden. How did you come to work with Sadler on the album, and what did he bring to the table in terms of capturing what lies at the heart of your music?
Yeah, so I actually was playing a show, and after I got done, this guy came up to me, and he was like, hey, you know, loved your set. Can I get some of your music? blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, you know, whatever. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm Jason Isbell's guitar tech, which then, you know, changed my attitude a little bit. I was like, oh, okay, it's not just some random dude who's like, can I get a CD? Because I'm like, yeah, you can go buy one. Like, I don't know why you're... And this guy's name's Kane, and we're good friends now. But he's like, well, I think the guys would really like to hear this. And I was like, yeah, sure, man. You know, and I didn't like take it to heart because, you know, people say stuff all the time. And so it was literally like 2 days later, I get an email from Sadler. He was like, hey, I listen to your stuff. I love your voice. I love your songwriting. You know, would you like to set up like a FaceTime or something and we can chat? He was like, I've produced a couple records. I'm looking to add some more to that catalog. And I was like, well, hell yeah. So then like 2 days after that, I was super nervous because I was like, you know, big Jason Isbell fan. And I'm like, damn, I'm going to get to sit here and FaceTime with Sadler. And they were out on tour. And yeah, we FaceTimed and went over some songs and stuff and set up a meeting. I went out to Nashville to his house and hung out with him. And it took me about, you know, an hour to realize, oh my gosh, this guy's a total nerd. So I can't wait for him to hear that, but not like a bad way. He's like super, like he's just this weird dude that can just sit there and just come up with all these riffs and stuff. I mean, like you would assume, like he's a musical genius. And we just clicked. I mean, I was there for like an hour and a half and he's like, you guys hungry? And we went and got Thai food. And I was like, all right. He's, you know, this is the kind of guy that I think I can work with. You know, he had me sold then. Yeah, that's been 2 years ago. And which is crazy to sit there and think that we've been working on this stuff that long, but it's all gone through, you know, a bunch of different processes. But the thing I love about Sadler is like, I mean, this guy, he's a rock and roll guy. I mean, that's what he listens to. He listens to rock and roll. He's like a 70-year-old man. He's a big Tom Petty. Yeah. And so that's what I like so much about working with him is, you know, a lot of other people were just wanting to like put me in this box and just have me as this, you know, we want you to do this outlaw country or we want you to do this folk music. We want you to do this. And Sadler's just like, no, we're going to do what we want to do. We're going to write songs that we believe in. And that's what we're going to do. And that's exactly what we did. And it all came together really well.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. So now while you wrote all of the songs on Reckless, both Sadler Baden and Paul Abersold, who engineered the album, also shared some credits with you on a few of the album's tracks. So talk about your approach to writing songs by yourself, which you have a lot of experience with, as well as writing with both Sadler and Paul, what those dynamics were like.
It's funny that you said Sadler because my grandpa got confused and was telling people that Adam Sandler produced my record instead of Sandler Baden. And so that was, yeah, that was a good one. I was like, yeah, no, that, but that'll be more my comedy special though. But yeah, so I'd always written alone, you know, I never co-wrote. And so that was like a thing that was like really weird for me. I wasn't like against co-writing. I just hadn't done it. And so Sadler was really the first person that I did that with. And Sadler and I, we can sit down together and write a song. We'll get something, even if we have to step away from it for a little bit and come back. And so that was really good for me because it challenged me to bring better stuff to the table too. Because, you know, I wanted to be somebody he wanted to work with. And so then I started working with Paul as well. And where Paul came into play is Paul builds tracks. And so that's kind of, I mean, Paul sent me a track this morning that I wrote to today. And that's something that I really enjoyed doing since going out to Nashville and meeting these people is that they can come up with the track, the music, the instrumentals, all that stuff. And they can just send it to me and I can ride down the road and just write, which is really cool. So I've been blessed to be able to start writing that way as well, which is, there's a couple tracks on the record that we wrote like that. Last Cigarette and Don't Cry were both written. I wrote all the lyrics just based off of these tracks. And so that it's honestly been like, it's been a process, but it's been good for me, you know, writing with these people who push me to write better stuff and challenge me not to just use the most common phrase, but to dig a little deeper. So it's been great.
Do you find it easier to write the lyrics after the track is written or vice versa?
It depends. I mean, I can write a completely different song with a track versus just sitting down. Just because if I've already got this beat and this feel and this mood for a song, or I've started, I work for Universal Publishing as well now. And so I've got access to a lot of beats and stuff that they send me. And it's great because I can kind of sort through there and be like, all right, I've kind of got this idea for something, but I've got to find that mood for it. And so that's a good thing about writing that way. But then I'll go sit down and pick up my guitar and just come up with something, you know, that way as well. So sometimes the lyrics come, sometimes the music comes. It kind of depends on the day and the flow. And some days you don't get anything. So,
yep.
I want to jump in on something that you were just talking about, because the album's first single, Don't Cry, immediately generated a buzz. Can you talk about the meaning behind this song and why this one was chosen as the lead single?
Yeah, so I had written that back last January out at the studio with Paul. He just played this track, and he was like, what do you think of this? I was like, that's awesome. I was like, just keep playing it on a loop. And so I sat down and just started writing. And I was going through a pretty tough time right there just with my depression and everything going on. And that time of year is just, you know, it's cold, it's snowy, it's rainy, it's dark. And so I was just, you know, struggling to, you know, working on the record. And it was just kind of like I was in this really one position. I couldn't really do anything. And I was having a hard time with that. And so those are the times, the winter months are the hardest times on my sobriety as well. And so this was just a song about, you know, looking at myself and who I've been and being like, all right, you got to make those changes and move forward. Like, it's okay for you to not be who you've been in the past. It's okay for you to change. You know, I was struggling with that too. You know, a lot of friends I don't have anymore, people I don't talk to, and beating myself up about that. And then just kind of realizing I was growing up, my life was changing, and that, you know, there was no reason to feel guilty about that. It was perfectly okay. And, you know, we all go through these seasons of trying to figure stuff out. And, you know, I think we're always just the hardest on ourselves. And that was a realization that I came to. And it was like, all right, you know, sometimes you got to kill the ego. You got to get past all the old stuff. And being torn between something I love and something I hate, you know, just kind of, it comes back to, I write some of my best stuff when I'm super sad. And, you know, it kind of, that tears you a little bit, because, you know, you look at all the, my favorite writers and stuff like that, Sylvia Plath and Kurt Cobain, all these people, you know, they wrote their best stuff when they were sad, they were depressed people. And so all of that was just stuff that was circulating through my brain when I wrote it. And I really wanted, when I got on the phone call with all the label folks, you know, figuring out what to put out, I was like, I want to put something out. I was like, the last thing that I put out was The Night. I said, I think Don't Cry is a perfect thing to follow The Night up, especially this time of year, you know, when we released it. I was like, it's a tough time for people mentally. I said, especially on top of that, we've got the pandemic on top of the holidays. People are isolated. They're alone. They've lost their job. I was like, people are going through a bunch of stuff. And I was like, I feel it's like a season of change. So that was a song that we ended up going with. And I was super excited for that.
Well, I just have to say, I have goosebumps hearing that story. My words that I took notes when I was listening to the album, and the word I have after hearing Don't Cry for the first time was sobering. And I mean that in a positive way. The song is just so healing. And that was the song that, as soon as I heard it, I called Jay immediately and said, we need to get Morgan on the show. This song is unbelievable.
I don't
know. Yeah, and I think that it's such an important message. The whole thing you just said, Morgan, about dealing with the depression and the pandemic and the holidays, and, you know, as somebody who also suffers from seasonal affective disorder, it's not something you should take lightly, for sure. But to be able to turn that over and flip it into something positive and give such a great message about it in a song like this, I think that speaks loudly to the changing culture on mental health awareness in this country as well. But for sure, it's such a great, important message for everybody to kind of just adjust. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. It's not an oncoming train. Just breathe. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Amen.
Absolutely.
So I mentioned before, I listened through the entire album and loved every track. I heard a unique blend of country, blues, pop rock, even bluegrass shining through some of your songs. I'm interested to know who some of your biggest influences are. And how they help shape the music that you run. I know you mentioned Kurt Cobain, you mentioned Sylvia Plath, which are phenomenal writers in their own right. Tell me more.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up being the biggest Elvis Presley fan ever. You know, that was all I wanted to listen to growing up. And I listen to Elvis all the time. I just think that played a role in me enjoying the pop music, the mix of country and pop. Because, you know, I mean, for a long time, they couldn't figure out, like, what the hell is he singing? You know, what is this rockabilly stuff? And so that, for me, I've always enjoyed not really being able to be put into a box, which is something, you know, you can see from this record. But as far as, like, stuff I'm listening to today, I look to people like Miley Cyrus. I love what she does because it's so many different things. You listen to her record, she's got a pop song, she's got a country song, she's got a rock song with Joan Jett on there, you know. So it's those are the type of people that I really, you know, look to. And Lana Del Rey, I'm a big Lana Del Rey fan. And the same thing kind of goes with Halsey as well. You know, she put out a record and she had a ton of different things out on that. And that's just what I like. I like seeing people just like reaching outside of the lines because it seems like everybody thinks, okay, well, you got to stay in this box and you have to just do this. And it's like, I don't want to just do that. I want to touch all kinds of different areas. And so I look to people like that kind of bleed the lines a little bit and choose a bunch of different routes.
Oh, you're definitely speaking to my musical soul because there's nothing I despise more than a song that sounds like it was literally made from a batter that somebody took a cookie cutter and just cut into the music, if you know what I'm talking about when I say that.
Right. Yep.
So yeah. Rolling Stone listed your single Wilder Days amongst their country music picks for the week of January 26th. In their review of that song, they stated that the song, quote, is as crisp and clean as she pleads with a paramour for a one-night love affair, while also stating that there's an unmistakable 80s vibe to the song as well. I would love to hear the story behind Wilder Days and ask you if that 80s vibe that they're mentioning was intentional or not, because it's a merging of two sounds that normally somebody wouldn't put together. And I just thought this was such an intriguing way to kick off the album.
Yeah, so Wilder Days was a song that's literally like the first song Sadler and I worked on together writing. And Wilder Days has been through so many processes, like just trying to figure out what's the right vibe for it. And it's always been, you know, a similar line. I remember the first night that we like really got the demo finished, it was like 10:30 and I'm an early bird, man. If I'm not touring, I'm like in the bed early. And this dude was so excited that he's like, we've got to go get ice cream and listen to this in the car. And he like burns a copy of it onto a CD and we get in Sadler's Honda Element. And we ride to Jenny's to get ice cream at almost 11 p.m. And this guy is like so excited. This song is, he's like blasting the song as loud as he can as we're riding through Nashville. So that was like that's the biggest memory I have of this song, because just the joy that Sadler had from doing that. And I remember waking up the next morning and he's, you know, sitting down there in his robe and his pajamas. And he's like, I have this other idea for it. And so it's great. It went from that to, you know, where we're at now. And it was like real organic, but we wanted it to kind of punch you in the face a little bit, but be one of those jam songs that also has meaning to it. And I mean, he definitely did that. That was all Sadler, you know, being able to really come up with the beat for that and really make all that groove. But it's exactly what I pictured in my head. And sometimes it's really hard to write something and you have this image in your head of like, okay, I want it to sound like this, I want it to look like this, but to actually do it is another thing. And we actually really did it for this song. And so this is a song that, you know, I was playing at shows and people were just freaking out, you know, wanting this song, where can I get the song? And so we were like, we definitely have to put Wilder Days out, you know, as the first standalone single off the record. So
now you guys spent 2 weeks in the recording studio crafting the debut album, pulling songs like Mend from Morgan Wade and the Step Brothers, which we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, as well as newly written material such as the album's lead track. What went into choosing which songs would make the album's final cut?
Well, there wasn't anything that we left off, which is funny because I look back and all the songs that we wrote and that we wanted to put on there, we put on there, which was good. I think we added Last Cigarette. It was Last Cigarette that was kind of like a one that we did that was written last. That was the last song that we wrote and put on the record. And that's one of my favorites. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't a big process to pick the songs because we knew the strongest songs and we really just focused on those. And those were the ones that we went with. So that was good. It wasn't like we got down to the recording and we were like, oh shit, you know, we need three more. Yeah, we don't have enough songs on here. We need more songs. And it wasn't like that, which is good. And that's what you want, you know.
Now, one of the songs, Mend, was from what Jay had mentioned, Morgan Wade and the Step Brothers, your band prior to this solo outing. What made you decide to revisit that one with Sadler?
Sadler really liked that song. That was like the song that he heard of mine that like got his attention, he said. And we felt that I've never had a producer, you know. I mean, the Step Brothers stuff was just, you went in there and we did some stuff and it was, you know, not organized or anything like that. And so Sadler was like, we got to give this song what it deserves. And he loves that song. So we went in there and we put that one on the record too. At first I was just like, why? Like, I'm so sick of that song. Like, why do you want to do this, Sadler? And he just kept like, and then, so now I'm glad we put it on there because a lot of people were like, oh, okay, that's great, you know, to revisit that song. And it does obviously sound much different than it used to sound, which is great. So it was Paul and Sadler both really pushed for that one. And I was like, okay, you know, you guys, I think y'all might know what you're talking about. Maybe a little bit.
I was going to say, in the story of the album as a whole, which Jay and I talk about this on the show a lot of albums tend to lean towards a collection of singles, not a thought as an album. And this one is the antithesis to that. It's really, really an amazing album. In 2020, leading up to the album's single dropping, you did some performances for Our Vinyl Sessions. Can you tell us what that experience was like and what you took away from those sessions?
Yeah, that was really cool. The folks over at Our Vinyl are super nice people. I was in the studio recording the record when I did that. And so I remember leaving and going over there and working with them. And they were so funny and awesome to work with. And my thing for that was, I was like, okay, let's just do some songs that, you know, aren't going to make you're not going to put on the record, but that, you know, people would like to hear as well. Just some songs that kind of live in the dark a little bit, but that you like to play and roll with those. And so that's what I did. I picked those songs and I was like, yeah, well, these aren't going on the record. I wrote them all myself. Let's throw them out there. And I'm glad I did that, you know, because people, and that's, you know, what I'm going to come to find is a lot of people see me as, you know, just the acoustic guitar, the girl sitting there playing the acoustic guitar and singing. And that's fine. So they can have that Our Vinyl stuff, but this album was for me, man. You know, like I'm more than just the girl sitting there with the guitar. Like, I can do a lot of other stuff. And so that's what's really good about being able to have the Our Vinyl stuff so folks can get their acoustic feel, you know, but then I've got this record where I'm jamming out and, you know, we've got a bunch of stuff going on. So I'm really glad that both of those things worked out and, you know, coincided with one another.
Now, we're going to touch here on the Step Brothers. Let's go back in time. You're 19 years old, started and fronted the group Morgan Wade and the Step Brothers. Let's talk a little bit about that experience and how it helped you shape your solo career path.
Yeah, you know, and I've gone through different, you know, since then, obviously different bandmates and moving on, you know, from certain groups, but I look back and it really did shape me. I mean, I had some great times with these guys, you know, and it was funny. I was writing today and I was talking with my friend and I was like, you know, it's funny. You look back at like some of these shows you played and I was just so excited back then to be able to play anything, you know, to have anybody that would be like, all right, sure, you know, you can play. And, back then, you know, the playing with the Step Brothers and playing with those guys, I mean, they were my close friends and we worked really hard back then and we drank really hard back then. We, you know, we did a bunch of stuff, but you know, I look back on those times like fondly because I'm like, I hope I never lose that drive and that excitement to play. And that was a big thing, you know, back then, because I look back, I'm like, good grief, that I can't believe you were excited to do that. Because I look back and I'm like, there's not enough money in the world to make me do some of the shows I did back then. And, you know, and I wasn't making any money then. So I needed that. And everybody needs that starting out. You know, people will be like, oh man, you just got real lucky. I'm like, nah, man, I worked. I worked hard. You look back and you're like, nope, I didn't play those 3 hours for nobody, you know, for nothing.
Oh, the marathon gigs.
Yeah. It's like, I'm like, damn. I mean, and so, yeah, I mean, like playing with those and I graduated not from them, but from like who I was. I started changing. I started growing up. You know, I got sober and I needed to move and I needed to get out of the town from where I, you know, where I was living back. And all of that has made me who I am. And I look back on all that, you know, fondly and with some laughs. But the solo career, now I've hit this spot in my life, and I hit it about a year ago that I was like, I'm just going to do what I want to do and what makes me happy, because this is my career. And at the end of the day, I'm the one that has to lay my head down at night and be like, are you proud of what you're doing? You know, it comes down to me. And so, you know, that's honestly, that's where I'm at with my solo career. And I'm the happiest with my career I've ever been, obviously, but you know, just still working for it.
You very well should be. I said this at the top of the show. This is one of those albums that I can already say without a shadow of a doubt will be one of my top albums of 2021. It is such a fantastic listen. And I did want to ask you something a little more all encompassing, because over the last two decades, country music, and I'm using quote marks when I say that in the air, has truly spidered out into all these various subgenres like country pop and, dare I use the word, bro country, for lack of a better term. But then there's also this Americana flavored rock that's become more mainstream. I'd love to know what your thoughts are on the state of country music in 2021.
You know, I used to sit back and be like, oh my gosh, this genre sucks. This, and then it hit me one day. I was like, if we all, you know, I look at my friends, and I can see, you know, we all have a different taste in music. And if they can put on a song and it makes them really happy to hear it, even if I think it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, I'm like, what's wrong with that? You know, and so that's how I'm kind of like looking at music now, if this makes any sense. It's like, I'm glad we're not all doing the same thing. Because if everybody was doing the same thing, there would be no market. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's what I'm looking at for 2021. I think everybody's changing. We're going through all this stuff and people are looking for real stuff again. And, you know, that's kind of, I talked to someone in the industry and he was like, you know, you look at the music back in the 60s and the 70s, and then you got into the 80s and you got, you know, kind of cheesier with some of our music. And then you go back into the 90s and it's kind of like that. And then, you know, you get into the 2000s and then you had 9/11 and people get real serious and the world comes together. And so, you know, we just went through this pandemic. I see 2021 for the music. I see it getting a lot better. But what is better? You know, I think we should always be improving on stuff. So what I think about music, somebody else thinks it's going to be two different things. But I've got a lot of faith that there's going to be a lot more women coming up in country music this year. I've seen a hell of a lot of women's names being announced, you know, on some of these playlists and stuff. And that, for me, is really cool. Obviously, you know, being a woman and all in the industry is not as easy. And I kind of rambled there a little bit because I could go on and on about all that stuff all day. But I have high hopes. You know, everybody's shut up and they've been at home. So I think that's, you know, when you're kind of locked up can be some of the best writing moments. So I'm hoping to see a lot of the stuff. Hopefully I'm going to be a lot of 2021 music world. So.
It's going to be like a musical baby boom, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, that's really how I see things, because, you know, people, they're sitting back and they're working on stuff. And that's what I've been doing. I've been the busiest I've been during this pandemic, you know, working on stuff. And I think that's when you get your most creative. is when you don't have a lot going on. You know, you got to sit there and really focus on things. So I'm excited to see what happens this year.
Brian and I have done the radio thing. We've worked in radio. I did almost a year of country in the 90s. I came into country radio when Faith Hill was getting big and Garth Brooks was big. And I think that you're right. You know, we've said this a few times. Radio has gotten so weird from when we started. There has to be a way for Luke Combs and Luke Bryan and the guy who's married to Gwen Stefani,
Blake Shelton.
There's got to be a way for them to live comfortably in a world with a Blackberry Smoke, with a Morgan Wade, with these kinds of artists to open up the genre a little bit and bring it back to keep those roots planted firmly in the ground while they're branching out into all these different things. There's got to be a way. Let's find that way.
Oh, for sure.
So, Morgan, I would love to know, what do you want people to take away from Reckless and your music in general? Because I've heard a lot of stories about the stuff you've went through, and just hearing it inspires me. And at the end of the day, it really hits home. It's just something that I feel, and I feel it in these songs. And I'd like to know what you would like people to take away when they listen to this.
Yeah, just my biggest thing is just being honest and being real. And, with this record, we didn't sacrifice lyrics. You know, I think the lyrics are still very strong here, even though the beats are very strong too. You know, sometimes people will be like, all right, well, we got a stronger beat and we lacked with the lyrics. I think both here are really strong. You know, we worked really hard on this. You know, I put everything that I had into this and took a lot of chances, and people took a lot of chances on me. And so this is all about growth. And, you know, I've grown a lot during this time, and I just want people to just enjoy the damn record. It's really, really what I want them to do.
And that's exactly what everyone is going to do. I promise you that. Morgan Wade, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
And we're back here in 2024. And like every episode of My Weekly Mixtape, if you head over to the episode page at myweeklymixtape.com, I've put together a playlist of Morgan's tunes based on the interview that you just heard. However, a lot's happened with her career since 2021, so I've added some newer tunes to the playlist, including her cover of Elvis Presley's Suspicious Minds, as in the interview, you heard her talking about Elvis being one of her favorite artists of all time. And I got to couple that with the fact that her cover absolutely rips. So I've included that on the playlist, along with tracks from her latest album, 2023's Psychopath, that includes the title track, which was the album's leadoff single, along with a couple songs that I feel best highlight that album's overall evolution in sound. Those tracks being 80s Movie, Guns N' Roses, Alanis, and the sultry ballad Want. Now, hopefully sometime down the line, Morgan will come back on the show and catch us up on all the stuff she's been doing. But for now, I hope you enjoyed that compelling interview with her. And be sure to check out her music if you're not familiar with it. She's definitely a unique voice in the country music scene. And I think I speak for both Jay and I when I say it was an honor talking music with her. With that, I also want to thank Jay for letting me unearth this interview, and who knows, since TuneStyles pretty much has disappeared from the podsphere, maybe I'll unearth a few of our other interviews as bonus episodes down the road if they're fitting with whatever topic we have going on at My Weekly Mixtape. Now, we're going to keep this country-esque vibe going for one more episode, as coming up next Monday, I have Drew Copeland of Sister Hazel joining me to create the ultimate Sister Hazel mixtape, and we're going to dive into the band's biggest hits, you know the ones I'm talking about, fan favorites, and deeper cuts, because I go a little nerd on this like I usually do. There's something here to please Hazelnut fans of every level, even if you're a newbie to the band. I also want to thank all of you for your continued support of the podcast. It truly means the world to me. I thank each and every one of you for taking the time out of your lives to tune in to my weekly musical escape. And I hope you guys are enjoying listening as much as I am enjoying putting these episodes out for you week in and week out. If there are any topics you guys want to hear on future episodes of the show, please send them to me, myweeklymixtape@gmail.com. I am all ears when it comes to new topic ideas. And if I use yours, I'll be sure to give you a shout out in the episode. Remember, you can find My Weekly Mixtape on almost all the social media haunts at My Weekly Mixtape. You can also head to myweeklymixtape.com to check out the full catalog of My Weekly Mixtape episodes. And if you like what you're hearing on the show, you can help me out by either telling a friend, leaving the show a 5-star review wherever you're tuning in, or becoming a Patreon Mixtaper at patreon.com/myweeklymixtape. There you can enjoy ad-free episodes of the show, become a future guest, and so much more. That's all for this week. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, enjoy the tunes.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.